This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we delve into those difficult moments with some very well-known guests. I'm Giles Payne-Phillips, and with me today in the broom cupboard in Chesham is the one, the only, Jim Daly.
That made me think of the old CBBC broom cupboard. Was it CBBC?
Mm. Yeah. You're our Pip Schofield.
Thanks, man. I don't quite have the Silver Fox look yet, although it is. It is.
Well, he didn't used to have that.
I mean, he died. He dyed his hair, didn't he, from a young age?
I did too.
Did you?
Mm. I went grey probably in my early 20s. Well, not full grey.
I've not known you. Well, I guess I didn't know you at the time, but I've not known you non-Silver Foxy.
Nah. I think the sides, the two sides of like the wings of my hair.
That sounds like a Boyzone song.
Yeah, the wings beneath my hair. They went grey quite early on, sort of probably early 20s.
They're the first ones that go, because mine are going as well. But I think they're the first to go, aren't they?
Yeah. Apparently, my mum went grey at a very young age, so it's obviously hereditary in some way.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, so then just carried on dyeing. I mean, I did a lot of bleach blonde. I bleached blonde when I got married.
Bleach blonde is the coolest one. Like, I want to go bleach blonde again. I think
I miss it. I know my wife started she was naturally blonde, and her hair sort of got darker. She's got older. She's gone back to bleaching her hair, and I'm tempted. Cool. But I think it's not very good on grey hair, apparently. It's not very good for the hair.
Oh, you'd think actually it would look better on grey hair. Like, it'd be more of a natural blend for it. But
apparently grey hair is more porous, so it takes in more of the chemicals, so it's more damaging.
Interesting.
So it might go a bit kind of like straw.
Oh, okay. Yeah, mine does that. So yeah. Mine's naturally quite thin anyway, but I'm quite dark, so dyeing my hair blonde either looks really cool or looks really awful. But I haven't done it for a long time. I want to, but my wife isn't a fan of it, and also my agent wouldn't be a fan, because then I'd turn up to auditions looking like a boy band member rather than...
They wouldn't be expecting that.
Yeah, you'd have to get loads of new headshots and stuff done again, which would be more money. But it does look good.
Yeah, I liked it. I think it was back in the day. I started doing it when I was sort of into Nirvana and stuff. Went to like Kurt Cobain.
Well, and you were in a band as well, so you got the excuse of it's a band look. It's like sort of Billy Joe Armstrong, Green Day. You know, it looks.
Yeah, exactly. It was that kind of thing. Yeah, and then you'd have like the Roots coming through. It looked quite cool when the Roots came through. Yeah,
I think we are a bit old. They were good days. I think we're a bit old for it now, unfortunately. But
That's what I think. So yeah, I had to embrace the grey.
But I think it looks good. It looks good.
Well, thank you.
It looks distinguished. I think that I'm definitely going to. I mean, unless I can negotiate dyeing my hair blonde again, I am going to engross the grey when it happens. And it is like it is. As I say, the wings are happening. So, but it's one of those things that it's meant to happen. So,
yeah, I think it. Yeah, and I think we do sometimes. I mean, you see it, don't you? Like, I think in the celebrity world, like people, some people, not all people, obviously, don't want to embrace that aging process, and they might get certain things changed or fixed.
But it looks, hair looks worse. Like, is it John Travolta? Someone, I think John Travolta for a while was dyeing his hair, and it looks so obvious. It looks so, you know what I mean?
Like a Just for Men type sort.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, it's. I think sometimes it can actually go against you. I think if you just embrace it.
I remember my old CDT teacher, Mr. What was his name? Mr. Harrington, right?
What CDT is that? Craft Design.
Craft Design Technology. Yeah, it's just DT now. They only call it DT okay. Design Technology, yeah. But it was craft design, so it was woodwork,
crafty,
or you know, creating stuff with wood, and then design and technology. Anyway, our CDT teacher, after summer holidays, he was sort of balding with sort of white hair almost, clean shaven. Mm. He came to school. And he had a full dark beard, and done his hair as well. And he'd obviously, I don't know if he'd got one of those spray on hair things, you know, where
I've heard of them,
makes
it
look almost weavy, kind of thing on it. And he had almost a full head of hair.
Well, Wayne Rooney used that spray on thing for years,
didn't? Well, and Shane Warne, didn't he use that?
Yeah,
as well?
I think before, because it can look really thin, but it can sort of like for a couple of hours fill it out. So no, you know what I mean? Like it's
it
basically
wilt under the.
But then yeah, so it's for like matches, but then of course you'd sweat it. You'd sweat it all out.
Sweat
so,
it off. So
poor
Mr. Harrington came in, and I don't think people
were kind. Well, you wouldn't
it wasn't
be
the
at
best
school.
Environment.
Come on.
I know it wasn't the best environment to change your look.
No, you wouldn't.
I was just thinking, like, you know, because kids are cruel and mean. And yeah, I think it was, you could spot it a mile off, to be quite honest. And it was a big error on his part. I think some weeks later, he'd gone back to his old look.
I think in school, don't give anyone, especially if you're a teacher, don't give anyone an opportunity. Too. But we do, Miranda and I used to do a pub quiz before obviously lockdown locally to us, and there's a guy called Steve and he runs multiple quizzes, and his quizzes are the best. Like, he puts in so much effort.
What, better than the blank quiz?
I mean, obviously not better than the blank quiz, no. Or we should get Steve to do the next blank quiz, actually. He puts in so much effort. He writes a new round, he's written so many rounds, and he does like four pub quizzes a night. Oh, sorry, not a night, a week. But he never does the same round again on that quiz. So he writes new rounds each week, and he makes sure he never repeats a round. So he's like put so much effort in. But anyway, he sounded like your teacher, sort of balding and grey. And then he turned up to a quiz once, and he'd got his goatee, had a grey goatee, and he dyed that like, and it was so obvious. And we didn't say anything, obviously, because we're not school kids; we're grown up adults. But it was just. All we talk about at the quiz now is Steve's dyed his
hair. Oh, poor Steve.
He was so lovely, though. I haven't seen him
And I guess
long.
Maybe he... I think
he went back as well after.
Yeah, I think you do. You sort of... It's just like... It's almost like trial and error, isn't it? You try it and then you know it's an error.
Yeah. But you know what? There are other ways. My hair went thin quite early on in my mid-20s, and I've been using... hairy growth pills, and they work. Okay. They work really well, really well. So there are other ways of doing it. To the point where I actually became the poster boy for Belgravia a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've had posters on the tube, and I've had so many people send me messages. Why the fuck are you on the tube?
Well, you have got.
Oh, that is the hair. Yeah.
Well, I'd have to say, Jim, you have got looks like a very strong head of hair.
But that's because of the.
I mean, obviously, because of the
meds.
On the podcast.
It's because of the meds, it works very well. So
is it a hormonal?
Yeah, thing? Yeah. It's basically, without getting to Jennifer Aniston, here's the science bit. Male pattern baldness is linked to high levels of testosterone. So in theory, if you're going bald, you are so manly. You are so manly for your own hair. Like your hair can't handle it.
Yeah.
The pills I take lower that. So I've become more in tune. With my non-manly side and also better head of hair. So in many ways, better all round.
Does it create more hair everywhere else?
It does not. And I did worry about that.
Ah, that's interesting.
Not. Yeah, it somehow seems
so
to
you because you've got, I mean, people that are listening obviously can't see you, but you've got a substantial amount of facial hair.
I've always been like that. I was like that from about the age of 12. I was able to buy beer very young.
Impressive.
So I've always been like that, but weirdly not on my head, but so anyway, I've just to counteract Mr. Harrington, like there are other ways of, but then again, that this would have been, you know, a long time ago for him. I think the technology has improved, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, anyway, look.
Well, that's, thank you for sharing that, Jim. That's good.
I don't mind. I'm quite proud of it because it's worked really well.
No, no, it's
well.
Good.
But
well, I was thinking I might tell my mate Dave because he's bought, I think we've had this, talked about this on a previous pod. He bought this thing called the Skull Shaver.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very substantial shaving device. Mm. And he's been sort of thinning for quite some time. Mm. And I've said to him, just don't worry about it, because he had a little bit of a thin patch on the crown, but generally it was okay. He didn't, well, like, he didn't need to go that next level. And he's obviously decided that he wants to try and embrace the shortness and has gone full, like which, proper shaved
I always
head.
Thought, before I did the hair stuff, I always thought when I get to like 40, I'll just do that, grow a beard, shave my head up. And also, one, it looks cool. Two, no one else cares. Like, you're the only person that really analyzes your own hair that much, so no one else cares or notices. But three, if he does want to try hair regrowth pills and go to Belgravia, if he mentions my name, I get a referral fee. So I just want to put that out there. That is an option, and it does work.
And for any of our listeners,
mention my name at Belgravia, and I think if you sign up, I do get a referral fee. So yeah, that could be a good little money spinner for me, actually. So no, I would recommend.
Or perhaps they want to sponsor the podcast.
Oh my god, yeah, they could do. But I think the underlining message is, be happy with what you got, you know. Yeah. You were made a certain way, embrace it. You're beautiful however you look, so yeah, just
you matter.
Shall we get on with the podcast, because that's a very long intro about my hair.
I'm so sorry.
I enjoyed
so
it
to all our listeners, but I think actually it was good to have this chat.
It was,
I think, sometimes it's important to talk about these things.
I feel good about it. And in fact, actually, sort of embracing the way we are, it's been a theme that sort of comes up in today's episode with I mean, the wonderful Laura Whitmore, who's just so nice. We had such a really nice chat with her. And we do talk a lot about sort of self-esteem and image and imposter syndrome and stuff like that. So in many ways, we've sort of led into the episode, but in a very convoluted long way.
Yeah, but I was like the way that you did that, though. That was really impressive.
Thanks, man. I'm finally learning how to do links after 10 years of broadcasting, whatever it is. I think we should let the listeners hear from someone interesting and not two men talking about that.
Well, we should say about Laura. Laura's obviously got an amazing Radio 5 Live show. Yeah. She's done loads of stuff on TV. Obviously, we talked quite substantially about her working on MTV, which she did for many years, getting to interview all sorts of huge pop and rock stars, wasn't it? Yeah, I mean, some of the names were incredible, and then moved on to doing I'm a Celebrity's Extra Show, and also obviously more recently Love Island, which she's started to present. So yeah, she's doing all sorts of things and lots of amazing podcasts as well. She does a podcast on podcasts.
Yeah.
Sort of like a sort of desert island disc for podcasts and several others. But yeah, I listen to her Radio 5 Live show regularly, and she's just really good. And we talked about how that, you know, it's her cultivating her own show on that is really nice. And she's a brilliant person and lovely to talk to.
Indeed. So I think we should just, that was a very nice intro and much more professional than mine. So I think we should just go into it. So this is the wonderful Laura Whitmore on the Blank Podcast.
Have you been finding this time work? You've been in the studio, have you?
Yeah, I'm kind of a mixture. I'm back into studio now. I'm back in BBC, but during the like proper lockdown, I was working from home. But I'm still doing a lot from home. But it is nice to get out every now and then and see people in real life. As lovely as it is to see your face, Giles, this way, it's like I actually am like, you just kind of, when I'm out now and I see a group of people in work, say in BBC, I kind of forget how to talk to people because how to socialise.
I've been taking, there's a cafe in where I live in my town in Seaford, and I've been making myself go there to get coffee in the morning and actually sitting in so that I can actually sort of learn to communicate again. Because I think I'm like, yeah, I've totally, apart from like my wife and children, I don't really see anyone else.
Yeah, I'm just used to talking to the same people. So I just have to remember how to make small talk.
It's a good skill. It's a good life skill.
Yeah, it is a good life skill. I thought I used to be good at it, but I don't know if I am anymore.
Yeah, it's been a weird. It has been a weird time. I've not really seen anyone face to face since February.
Really?
Apart from my family. So I don't. I'm going actually tomorrow. I'm going on a charity marathon walk, which I have not trained for at all. It's going to be a disaster.
Wait, so like how long is that going to be?
So 26 miles, but walking.
Like a full marathon?
But walking.
Is that going to take you the full day?
Yeah. We're starting at 7 a.m. and it's in South London and I live in Buckinghamshire, so I've got to leave the house at 5:30 tomorrow morning, which is an absolute nightmare.
Oh, well done you.
Yeah, I've tried really hard to get out of it, but it hasn't worked, unfortunately. But that's going to be with... We're in bubbles, actually, so it's bubbles of six.
Yeah.
But it's still going to be loads of other people and people that I've seen on Zoom and not seen in person. I'm actually really intrigued to see what it's going to be like, actually, to see people in real life, see if my chat still holds up.
You'll be really tired, apart from the very obvious reasons of the walk is going to tire you out. But I just think it takes a lot of energy, doesn't it, to kind of get out and socialise again.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I always found that anyway, actually, that it took a lot of energy to socialise. But I think...
True.
Without the training of socialising with people in the last few weeks, it's going to be like going on a marathon walk without training. So I'm going to be tired in multiple ways. Can't wait.
I really hope the weather's good for you. Like, I hope it's today and not yesterday.
Last year because our daughter had just been born, which is a great excuse. But this year, and it rained really hard last year and everyone was soaked. But this year, I think the weather is... I think same as today, hopefully. So fingers crossed. Yeah.
Do you remember like the London Marathon? Oh my, I was like talking to some people who were doing that and it was just torrential. I mean, it's tough enough as it is normally without that. Mm. So I'm praying you can do a rain, or what, a sun dance?
Sun dance,
not a rain dance, not a rain dance, a sun dance.
Yeah, the opposite of
a rain dance. My friend who was doing the marathon said she'd left out a brush and an onion for luck, to bring the sun. I hadn't heard it. But she said, I couldn't find the brush, so I've left it on the mop. And she goes, I've only got a red onion. And I'm like, I don't know. Obviously, it didn't work.
I'm about to say, did not work.
I want to know what this... Why an onion? And I have no idea.
Your guess is as good as mine.
I know. So you can just put any onion out.
If I try and do the opposite of those two things. So the opposite of an onion...
What's the opposite?
Is, I don't know, an orange?
Sure.
And then, what's an opposite of a brush? Something that makes...
Well, I don't know. They're both quite acidic, Jim. I think you need to find something alkaline.
Okay, this reminds me of science GCSE, Giles, which is not fun.
Sorry.
I'll have a think of what's the opposite of a brush. A brush makes you look good, so something that makes me look dishevelled. I don't know, maybe just some mud or something. I don't know.
But I'm like, you don't use a sweeping brush.
Sorry, I thought you meant like
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe you do.
Like a broom.
Yeah, sorry. A sweeping brush.
It would explain, actually, today's bad.
That makes more sense of why she used the mop, because you must have thought she was just absolutely
And that's
insane.
Why it rained.
That's why it rained. There you go.
Oh, well, there you go. It's weird we have these weird superstitions about things. Do you have any superstitions?
Yeah, I can get quite superstitious, especially if I'm in acting mode. I remember doing a theatre run and I was on stage, and I think a lot of actors and a lot of theatres, I remember when I was in the Scottish play. I can say it now. I can say Macbeth because I'm not in a theatre.
Yeah.
But oh my God, nobody would say
it's
it.
Weird, like,
no, knock on wood. Like, no one would say it. And if someone said it, everyone would go mad. And I used to do a thing of like knock on wood before you go on stage and like all these mad things. And I think you get so caught up in it because you're like, well, I did that last night and that was a really good show. So I better do it again tonight. And yeah. And I think the more I hung around people who were like that, the worse I got.
Yeah,
and then I realise, like, it probably doesn't really matter. But you do whatever. I sometimes find like a glass of wine before you go on stage. It's not really a superstition, but I do find it helps.
Probably helps with everything, actually. I think a glass of wine helps
with everything, except you know if you're a driver or something.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah. That's not so good. Was acting something you wanted to do then?
Yeah, well, I did a lot growing up. I studied my degrees in journalism, but I also studied drama. I studied performance and. I just remember I grew up with just my mom and the teacher told her that I was a very shy child and she thought that's very strange because Laura talks a lot at home but I wasn't talking a lot in school. So she got me drama classes. It was just like a local drama group when I was about five and she said I came home a new person. She doesn't know if it was necessarily a better person because I had like a hand on my hip and I had this new attitude. But it definitely helped me kind of come out of my shell a bit. I used to think I was a lonely child, not only child. I thought it was called lonely child, not an only child.
Okay.
I have two half brothers now, but there's a big age gap. So I was a teenager before they came around. So yeah, drama and theatre for me was a great escapism. And my dad, who I used to see every week, once a week, probably didn't know what to do with a daughter. So he used to bring me to the theatre, to the Olympia and the Gaiety in Dublin, and we'd see plays and shows. So for me, it brings back lots of nostalgia, and a theatre is just a beautiful place, a place of storytelling. And I love stories. That's probably why I loved studying journalism as well. Whether you're interviewing someone, you know, doing a podcast, doing a chat, it's all stories. So I just became obsessed with the theatre world. Yeah, it's not even like something that I was intentionally pursuing. It was just always there in the background, still is.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to talk about journalism, actually, because my degree was in journalism as well. And gone.
How many hours a week did you do?
Not many. Oh my God. First year, I literally did nothing. Literally nothing. I'm not even joking.
You and everybody.
Honestly, it's just such a doss of a course. It's such a good...
Where did you do yours, by the way?
So I studied in Dublin City University, and then I had a semester abroad in my fourth year in Boston.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Boston. Yeah, I read that. Yeah,
that was just... And I just turned 21.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, that's such a good time.
I also think what university and... I know, you know, people kind of say, oh, it's a DOS year. But that year was so important for other things, like not the academic side, but social sides. I went to a convent with all girls. It was the first time I had boys in my class. Yeah. You didn't go to a convent.
My primary school was run by nuns.
I recognised it. It's like Dairy Girls, you're the one guy in the class. But for me, it was, I was 17, I started uni, and it was like living away from home. So for me, I think the social side is so important of that time, as well as the academic.
I've felt the same thing. I felt like when I went to uni, it was like 50% academic. Well, in theory, 50% academic, 50% social is probably more way towards the social. But it does sort of set you up. And I almost felt like it didn't really matter what degree I did. I mean, I did journalism because I wanted to get into journalism. Haven't really done
and it's broad. Since. There's different areas. Exactly. You've got TV, radio, print.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was doing print, but I've done loads of different stuff since. But actually, as a degree, it's quite a good grounding, actually, because journalism and sort of storytelling, as you were saying, it's actually involved in so many different industries, and it can really set you up for just that basic communication and being able to talk to people or find out a story and then finding that common ground. So even though I'm not really doing journalism anymore, I found it actually. It's been useful skills throughout my life, really, for everything.
Definitely. And kind of getting out there. A lot of times, you know, you have an idea of a story and just getting out there and making the story. So like going out, interviewing people, and it's nerve wracking, knocking on people's doors. I mean, I wouldn't recommend doing that. But do you know what I mean? But it does kind of push you out there a little bit. It is mad when I look back, though, because I was studying about 12, 13 years ago. Like how much the world has changed. Like I remember we had a class going, let's talk about the internet. You know what I mean? We kind of did research like old school ways. We didn't Google. Google was there, but not to the way it is now. And it's just crazy how things change. And even media law, like I studied media law and now I work in an industry where sometimes I see it from the other side and I'm like, all that thing about defamation and writing things that aren't true, like nobody does, like nobody listens to what I learned in that module. People just write whatever the hell they want.
Oh yeah, it's mad. I actually never passed my NCTJ prelims. There was two media law
degrees. It's all out.
Degrees,
it's all out.
And I don't know what you're talking
two media
about
law
now.
And two like local government.
OMG, LOL.
GLOL. Oh, is that a different...
No, I'm saying LOL. Laugh out loud.
I nearly got sued actually at my first job at my local paper for £250,000, which was I'd have been 24.
Is this the great pigeon incident?
What? Okay, tell me
the
story.
The editor wasn't in that day, so the day we got the letter, it was me and the senior reporter Stuart, and he was shitting himself. He was quite a nervous person anyway, sort of person that like thought the local government were like, always up to something, so it's quite paranoid. We got this letter saying we're suing your paper and the reporter, James Daly, for £250,000 because, oh my God, I was so scared.
Yeah, I was like, what did you do?
It was ridiculous. It was a down page article. So like 200 words max. And I'd gone to a really, really boring council meeting because that's what you do on local news. You just go to boring council meetings and hope something happens and then write about it. And there was this really rich guy in Sevenoaks in Kent where basically loads of rich people. And he kept pigeons.
This is such a middle class.
It's a middle class problem. And he kept pigeons. I think bred them or raised them or something. I don't know. And the local neighbours were annoyed because his pigeons kept pooing on everyone's cars. As you can imagine, it was a mess. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, you need to get rid of your pigeon coops or pigeon houses. And it turns out he didn't have planning permission for one of his pigeons. He had two. Didn't have planning permission for one. And so they were like, okay.
But you need planning permission to have pigeons.
Apparently so. And he didn't have them. But he was rich and didn't care, so just did it anyway. Yes. So I wrote about this, and literally, this is what it was. I wrote that he didn't have planning permission for both his pigeon houses. And it turns out it was only one. He didn't. He thought that that devalued his house trying to sell at the same time by £250,000 and wanted it back off me in the paper. And it was fucking terrifying. In the end, we just wrote an apology. And I think our lawyers were like, we don't have that much money, so you're not going to get it. But yeah, it was terrifying.
But it's so mad that they like follow and chase you. I was actually laughing this morning with my other half because we were like, there was a whole article about my house, about like my lavish house that I live in. And I was like online on one of those online websites. And I was like flicking through going, this isn't my house. It was like me in a, it looks like I have a 10 bedroom house. One was like me in a hotel room. One is my house back in my mom's house from 2 years ago. I'm like, how many bedrooms do we have? And like nobody does anything, and you kind of feel like you've got no power. But I guess if you're rich, you can probably afford to have the lawyers and stuff chase everything.
Well, that's the way of life in general, I think, that rich people are able to. Most of us probably can't. But I think you've definitely touched on a point there that, like, these days, I think journalism changed so much since I got into it.
It's got lazy as well. We weren't pulling things from Instagram.
Exactly. We had to ring people and like ask them questions, and we had to do it with shorthand.
So I remember, did you study shorthand?
Yeah.
Yeah, I studied Pittman's shorthand. Yeah, Pittman, and like that module was on a Monday morning. And it was like, I think about five people would show up. But it was the one thing you had to pass shorthand to get your degree. Yeah. Like you had to, it was the one module you had to pass. And it was, I just remember like nobody went. And it was I think I was one of five. So I was such a nerd. I was one of five people who passed it, and then everyone else had to repeat the summer. Like it was mad. It was just like, just go to the class. Yeah. Just go to the class.
I was one of those non-five. I didn't go to it because it wasn't compulsory at our university. Jim, and then terrible. I got the job in my local paper, and they were like, "Have you got your prelims? No. Have you got shorthand? No. Sorry."
But nobody uses shorthand now. Like also half the time, if I write it, I can't read it back.
No.
Like I'll write it. And I'm like, it takes. It's. I'm quicker if I'm actually quicker at texting in like text speech without vowels. Than I am writing.
But
I don't
understand why couldn't you use a dictaphone? No, they're like, oh, we got you a shorthand because if someone complains, you'll read your shorthand. Just listen to the dictaphone. I don't understand why.
That's probably better than my shorthand.
Only time I'm like, what? Are you shorthand now? Sometimes I still think in shorthand. Like if I'm just like watching TV, I'll think about the words in shorthand.
I can see the way it goes.
The only time I do it now is if I'm at home with my mum and dad and the phone rings, I'll take the note in shorthand just to annoy my mum because I know she can't read it.
And then she'll have no idea what it says. But I used to get confused with, you know, the way sometimes with the dots for the vowels, like where are you putting the dot? And then I'd read it back and it's a different word if I've forgotten it. So I'm like, just write the word down. It's just easier.
God, honestly.
Just write the fucking word down.
Nightmare. Actually nightmare. A weird time. A weird sort of quite backward, archaic time that wasn't that long ago.
No. I wonder are they still teaching it? I'm assuming they are.
They must do. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
That time in Boston, was there a remarkable difference between what you were doing here and then working over there?
Yeah, big time. Because at the time when I studied in Dublin, I mean, I have to say the Irish education system is brilliant, and we're very lucky that it was at that time anyway free education for university once you got the points. Except we say free, but then there's obviously the books and everything else that comes around with it, so it's never free.
Yeah.
But in the US, it costs a fucking fortune to go to third level education, like stupid money. So everyone in Boston University were paying something like 25 grand a semester, I think, something like that.
Fucking wow. Sorry.
In DCU, we weren't paying anything. So four of us from Dublin City University exchanged with four from Boston. So those poor gobshites were stuck in this university that was lovely and good fun and good crack and stuff, but obviously didn't have the same financial support and money. So obviously the equipment and this, it was just a different world over in Boston. And also Boston is like, I think there's like 84 third level institutes over there. It's probably more now. So, you know, it's you've got Harvard, you've got like, you know, I can't even think of anything else. You've got, what's the other one? There's like loads. It's recording in.
Never answer calls with no caller ID. That's like number one rule. I would never answer that.
Well, it's not now. It's now. It's we've heard you've been in an accident. That's the one I get.
Oh yeah, and I'm like, have I? Oh my god, I did not know. I haven't left the house.
I'm just discovering I've been in an accident, and I've got 10 more rooms in my house. This is a hell of a day.
That is recorded. I've recorded it again. Oh, they left me a voicemail. I look forward to that
later.
Okay,
yeah.
On.
We've heard you, Pin.
Fun. But yeah, Boston was brilliant. So yeah, so it's like we're surrounded by students, I said, and you've got like Harvard and Boston University and MIT and all these great kind of establishments. And I was 21. It was just fun. And we had a class on a Friday called the Newsroom. And you went into a real studio,
cool.
Like a proper studio, like a proper newsroom. It's, and I had to laugh because I'd been to just to kind of day visits and stuff to like RTÉ and TV3 in Ireland at that stage. And like the university newsroom was like better in this university in Boston because they just had money. Like, so, it was a lovely experience. It was a lovely experience.
Was that the first taste of like the TV thing though? Because I mean, obviously, it was a while before you started getting into TV.
Yeah.
But was that something like started a little gem of an, like, this is the kind of thing I want to do?
Well, yes and no, I guess. So with in America, it's so funny because obviously it's just different culturally. So with the newsroom, every Friday we'd be given everyone had to do a different job. So one person was a camera person, one person was script producer. You could be the weather person. You could be the main anchor. You could be the sports commentator. First of all, I'm not hugely into sports, especially American football. So like, I have no idea about American football, but like there'd be a script. So if that was your job, everyone had to do everything at some point.
Okay.
So you would just have to like be watching the footage and commentating what, you know, the writer and script writer had written. And I was like, I don't know. But it was fun. But it was, yeah, it was definitely good. Well, I know what I don't want to do.
Nope.
Yeah. But around that time as well, because I didn't really know many people bar the three other people that I'd gone with, I did join the drama group over there and I ended up doing a play when I was there for six months.
Oh, okay.
So I kind of always find, you know, you find your people. And I always feel people, no matter where you are, no matter what culture, there'll always be people who are quite similar to you and your ideas and openness and stuff. So, it was really lovely doing that. But did it give me a taste of TV? I don't think I had a clue what I was doing on TV until I was on TV. Like, there was no real training, if I'm really honest. I just, because it happened very quickly for me because I won a competition. So it just kind of went from being, you know, a researcher and an intern in a newsroom to like being on television interviewing Coldplay. Like, there was no real in between.
Yeah, but I think if you're someone that's quick at picking stuff up, I think TV, you can sort of get the hang of it quite quickly, I think, can't you? And sort of.
Oh, yeah, it's easy to get the hang
of
it.
Piece of piss.
Oh, I'm a blagger, though. I always think fake it until you make it. Just blag it. Blag it. Everyone else is blagging it.
Yeah. We're all winging it, aren't we?
We are all, to varying degrees, winging it. But it is actually, I would say, blagging is my one life skill, I think. Or being able to look like I know what I'm doing when I'm not. I must have a really good poker face, which is weird. I don't think I do. But
that's a gift.
It can get you many places.
Yeah, and in trouble as well. Should you be here?
Giles, we have something exciting to announce here in the middle of the podcast, and that is that we are launching Blank merchandise. It's official.
No way. Proper merchandise.
Proper merchandise. So if our listeners would like to buy Blank merchandise, they can go to podcastmerch.co.uk/blank and you can get a range of things, can't you?
You can get t-shirts, hoodies, mugs. What else? Baby grows,
because I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of babies out there that love the Blank podcast. I know mine does. And you can also get, we've got various designs, haven't we? We've got one that's got our Blank logo on, and then we've got two that are inspired by pod guests.
Yeah, one of them was inspired by Rebecca Callard, who was on, I think, the 8th episode of the Blank pod, and hers was to do with her video collection, which we were talked about at some length, and we thought that what video library, which was the video shop I worked in back in the 90s, was an excellent name for a romantic band of the 1980s.
Yeah, and then you made this this great what looks like album cover of you and me with hair from Flock of Seagulls. So we thought, you know what, let's make that into a design, so you can get that on t-shirts and hoodies and sweatshirts. And then we've got one that's inspired by Sanjeev Bhaskar when he talked about the three different stages of Blank: fearful Blank, neutral blank and happy blank. And we've turned that into a design as well. So we've got various designs that people can get and in different colours as well. I'm very excited by this, Charles.
I'm really excited. It feels like we're a proper thing now.
It does indeed. So if our listeners would like to buy some merch, the T-shirts, for example, are 18 quid. The hoodies are 27 quid. The tote bags are 17 quid and mugs are 15 quid. And of course, we do get a small cut as well of everything that's sold. So if you'd like to support the pod, then you can do it in this way and you'll get yourself some exclusive blank merchandise.
So go to podcastmerch.co.uk/blank. When you went for that competition, though, did you... Obviously, you were trying to win, but did you think that you would?
I kind of wasn't, if I'm really honest. Oh, okay. Like, I know that sounds, like, mad to say. So I was young. I just finished... I was finishing my fourth year at university. So I had... The first half of the year, I was away in Boston. Then I came home and did my thesis. And then, as part of your final, you have to do an internship. So I was working in a radio station in Ireland in a newsroom, and then I ended up being made permanent there, which was really nice. But it was hard. Like, newsrooms are hard, especially when you're like the new girl, and you know, you come in with your blonde hair and people probably are like, ignore you, or they like... I made some really good friends there, but it's a tough place because everyone's so busy. They're not there to show you how to do things. Yeah, I found it quite tough. And I remember one morning there was a car crash on like the M50. And I remember thinking, oh, good, we've got something to talk about on the show. And I was like, oh, I don't want that to be my life. I don't want to, like, you know, you hear like a devastation like that and you kind of think, oh, we've got content. So I was kind of in that place and I was like, okay, I'm really interested. I like storytelling. I like doing stuff in this, but I don't know if this is right for me. So I was kind of in that weird place. And then I saw this advertisement on MTV for this. They're looking for a new face of MTV. And I thought, God, like, I don't know. Like, none of my family are in the industry. Like, my mom's a civil servant. Like, my best friends from school, like, studied medicine, physiotherapy, chemistry. So, like I was the odd one out. So I didn't know anyone in the industry. I was like, I just, like, need an email address. Do you know, like, maybe I can get work experience somewhere else. Like, I'll finish this internship. Maybe I'll work here for a little bit, get experience, and then try and get in. Because I kind of felt, whether it's true or not, sometimes you feel like it's who you know. Like, you can have this degree, but it's like, and it's like, I just need an email address. So I kind of entered that competition because I wanted an email address. And I had an email address for MTV. I still remember there was a guy called Neil. And I was like, oh, I've got a guy's email address. Neil, bless him, is a freelancer. I actually still speak to him sometimes, but he was a freelancer, so he probably couldn't do that much for me. But I sent in a video, and that was really it. And I kind of just thought, okay, I've got, like, maybe I'll get work experience out of it, because, like, I'm not experienced enough to kind of get a role like that. And also, I'm in Ireland. If this was a big UK search, and like, they were opening it out to other people. And then I got a call a few months later. I think I put it in around December time. It was about February when I got a call saying that they've seen the video and they were kind of going through people, and I got down to the last few hundred. And if I'd come over to London. And I remember thinking, oh, I want to have more than an email address. I'll get to meet them. And then I might get to have more email addresses. So that is where my mind was, all honesty. Hustling.
Yeah. I mean, hustling, I think, is an important... I think in many industries, I've found in entertainment, comedy, journalism, a lot of it is nepotism and who you know, and people do progress from contacts. And you have to, if you don't know anyone, and none of my family are in any of those industries either, you do have to hustle. I saw a thing on Twitter literally this morning, and it's a lady who is now, I think, a producer at the James O'Brien show on LBC. And she rang up to get work experience, pretended to be someone from The Guardian. Oh, hi, it's Sarah from The Guardian here. I just need your producer's email address for something we're doing, to get an email. And then that was her way of getting an email, and then used it to get a job there. So, you know, sometimes you have to hustle and it makes you creative.
I love that. Yeah, and I think there's a way to do it, because I know myself sometimes I'm afraid. You don't want to be too pushy. There's a difference between hustling and pushy and doing things the right way. But I also like that initiative. Anyone in any team that I've worked on, especially like in radio, I like you know, you like people who come up with ideas, go, okay, we didn't get that guest. How can we get that guest? What are other ways to go about getting that guest? So I like people whose mind work that way without being pushy. So like, I totally get that. You just, and you have to, you know, this world, you kind of have to do things for yourself. People think, how do you become a presenter? Does it just fall on your lap? You're like, yeah, no, yeah. Like you have
yeah,
to work.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it was funny enough, going back to those days when you started off in that, that radio station in the newsroom.
Yeah.
And actually that's probably quite a brutal kind of, you know, you're jumping in with 2 feet a little bit and people not necessarily giving you the breaks or understand, you know, being yeah. compassionate to you because you're new. And that, I guess, in a horrible way, it toughens you up. And I don't like to use that kind of
it's life though, words, isn't it? Yeah, it's life.
And you have to you sort of become resilient to how the industry works a little bit.
Yeah, no, a big time. And you don't want to be spoon-fed because that's not what life is either. I think you need to kind of get out there and do things for yourself, learn the hard way sometimes. And I did, but I got to meet some people who are still like my best friends. One of my friends, Sam, she was working on the same show. She'd just been made a reporter. She's only a few years older than me. So we were kind of the two young girls there. Like she's gone on now and she's like the editor in chief of Glamour in the US. And she was like head of social on CNN and worked for BBC News. And she's brilliant. So, and like we all hustle, like we both, I remember at the start we were like, oh, this is hard, but like you stick it out and it will happen. Because I know sometimes it's hard. You'll get to stages going, why am I doing this? Like no one's noticing, what's the point? Everybody feels like that. Everybody, no matter who you are, even if you've got somewhere because of nepotism, everyone will find that. And then that comes, that comes with its own difficulties, doesn't it? If you kind of get a job because of who you know, then you're always kind of feeling you owe it to someone else, and that's why you got there. You never feel like you've done it by yourself. So there's difficulties no matter what way. We've all faced it.
Success. Like, I think even successful people will feel I'm not being noticed or have downtime. I remember my wife's an actor and she was reading an article about someone who I think had been up, either won or been up for an Emmy or a Golden Globe or something, first big award, and then was like, I've made it. The offers are going to roll in. And they had no offer for like 6 months or a year or something. I'm just like, what? I've just won an award. So I think even if you have varying degrees of success, you can still get those feelings of, you know, what's happening.
It's crazy. I love listening to Super Soul Sunday podcast with Oprah. Love her. And she had Bradley Cooper on when he was nominated for an Oscar for as director. He had just said how much of a failure he felt. And it was mad because he'd been nominated for an Oscar, but he didn't win. So everyone's like, oh, you didn't win. Yeah. Oh, you didn't win. And it's like, can you imagine? Like, he's like a great actor who then gets nominated, like just gets nominated to be as director. Like, that's huge. And he felt like a failure. And I thought that was really interesting. I was like, oh God, everyone feels it. Even like the most successful.
Mad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is something we sort of find from this podcast. You know, we talk to brilliant people like yourself who are doing really well, but we all have these same feelings of, you know, not mattering where you are on the scale of success, but we have these same kind of neuroses and anxieties about, you know, what we're doing. It's just like universal. It's like the human condition, isn't it?
Yeah, we all feel shit.
Better name for the podcast.
We all feel shit.
And also, but also, Giles, you're talking about sort of the scale of success, but it looks like I'm sort of wafting a smell, doesn't it? Sorry. The scale of success. But that's interpretive as well, because what one person might, you know, feel is successful, another person might not, but in the same way. I think it's important as well that we sort of try and, I was thinking about this morning, actually, like measuring our own successes, and this comes up in the pod a lot, Giles, it's like my catchphrase, isn't it? Give yourself the win. But like, you know, measuring,
like
if you feel like you're having a crap day and you're like, oh, I'm not getting ahead, think about like things you have done well, like what, you know, I've got married to my best friend and I've got a beautiful daughter who's just turned one. And so I think, okay, so career wise, I might be in a bit of a stumbling block, but I've got so many wins that side. So it's just, I don't know, sometimes you just have to sort of take stock of it and be like, what have I done?
I get, and I can't remember who said it. I know my other half said, Ian said it to me, but I think a comedian or someone else said it. I can't remember who said it, but basically when you get up in the morning, make your bed. And the reason you make your bed is it's like a subliminal message in your head. It's like, I've achieved something today. So even if you do fuck all, when you go to bed that night, you're like, oh, I'm going into a made bed because I made it this morning. And it's just those little things that can really change your mindset.
Well, have a shower. It's amazing. I feel incredible. Actually, I literally haven't today. That's so bad.
Either have I.
No. Thankfully, the podcast.
You were wafting the smell. Yeah, yeah, that's what you were doing.
It was, yeah.
I'm wearing synthetic as well. But it does. Sometimes I'll have a crap day, and in the evening I think, oh, I'll have a shower, and just something about it makes you feel good. And I guess it is that same idea of doing something.
What, something you've accomplished. It's all relative as well, even if it's a little thing in the day.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, we've started doing like gratitudes with the kids at night when we have dinner, and getting them to say like they one good thing, one bad thing, and then one thing they're grateful for, and
love
we
that.
Do it as well. And yeah, and it's and honestly, it's so like it's so great for all of us. Just to kind of express how our days have been, and then you know you always end up with something positive. I think that's it's important to do those sort of things, I think,
because it's very easy to remember the bad things, isn't it? It's very easy. Oh, this didn't go right, this didn't happen, this, and we do that, and that negativity kind of then just, you know, takes over our mind. But just remembering one little good thing, something, as I said, gratitude, something to be thankful for, really helps.
Yeah, it really does. So from doing the MTV stuff, what was next for you? You did I'm a Celebrity, didn't you, for a bit?
Yeah, so MTV lasted a long time. So I was doing that for about 7 years. It was only supposed to be a year contract. but I didn't leave. I got that email address when I was never left. So I'm a Celebrity kind of happened during that period. So I think I must have been in MTV about 2 or 3 years maybe. And I'm very grateful for MTV because it kind of allowed me to learn my craft, but not like, you know, it was a great show and stuff like that. But like doing MTV News and doing these little packages and traveling around, even though I'm interviewing all these massive stars, I feel it's very different to a lot of television shows now, that when you win, you're kind of thrown out there. Like the press at that stage were not really interested. Like, you know, I could kind of go under the radar and just learn my craft and kind of get on with it. And then about 2 or 3 years, I must have been into it, and I got asked to audition for I'm a Celebrity. And I still remember I auditioned with Joe Swash and someone's at my door. Hold on. Can I get the door?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no worries.
It's real. I'm at home. It's real.
Don't worry.
Live.
Just the postman. There you go. All good.
Love the postman.
Love the postman. I know. I feel like I see him all the time now. I've lost. What was I saying?
The audition.
Joe Swash. There you go. Joe Swash. Yeah. So I had to audition on the This Morning sofa because it was in ITV. Yeah. Oh, so we had to sit on the sofa and and that was the first time I ever met Joe. He'd already worked on the show for a few years and. Nerve wracking because I'd worked on MTV and I'd done bits and pieces, but this was like this is a big live show. Mm-hmm. And, but I got it. I just can't believe it. I still remember like when they called me and said, okay, so you're going to go to Australia, you know, working with Ant and Dec and have an hour live show every day, like doing like 24 live shows every day back to back. And at that time we were pulling in for an ITV2 show, like 2 million or something like that, which is mad.
Big numbers. Wow,
big numbers. So I was out of my depth, but I was very grateful I had those few years in MTV just kind of learning.
I mean, yeah, because live TV is a whole different beast. It's it's mad. But again, I think, you know, going back to earlier, you learn it on the job and you get it wrong.
You learn
get it
by
right,
doing.
And
yeah.
You know, and every time you get something wrong on live TV, you're like, well, I'm definitely not doing that again. And you pick it up.
Yeah.
But I think also as well, viewers kind of like it when it goes a bit wrong.
Oh. I love it too, and that's, you know, it's live. And you know it's live and it's real, and I was very blessed that like I've worked with so many different people now over the years, and I think the more you work with different people, you just learn from them. You're like a sponge, you just absorb. So like when I first started working, I worked with Joe Swash and I worked with Russell Kane. And I mean, they're very different to me, but you pick up things that they do. Ant and Dec, I used to watch them. We used to have to go and watch their show before we took over their set. And they'd mess up on live, but it's how they handle it. It's not about messing up. It's how you carry on. That's what I learned quickly. And I love when they mess up because they're so funny and they giggle. And they also have that, they just have this great control on set because they're such pros. And I remember once, I think like Ant or Dec, was like interviewing one of the campmates. And then I could hear loads of people talking in the background. And as he was interviewing, he just kind of went like this and everyone went quiet behind him. I'm like, they're professionals, like they're good at their job. And then I worked with Rob Beckett because he came in for a bit. And I feel like the more people I work with, just the better I get. Not that I necessarily have to be like them, but you just kind of pick up different skills.
I think that's an important way to be. That's an important way to be in any industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking also like working with comedians is probably quite a good thing as well, because...
Yeah, well, but then I feel like comedians, bless them, like they had the hardest work because they have to be funny. Like, yeah, true, I'm funny by accident, and people are like, "Oh, she's funny." I'm like, "There's no pressure." Do you know? My job is to keep things going. My job is to like not make it about me. Like, do the interviews, hit the counts, and kind of move everything along. That's my job, and then you're kind of juggling everyone else around you. But yeah, I do love. I think. Different people I work with, different parts of my personality come out as well, which is quite fun. Now, you work with a comedian, of course, you're kind of, your funny bone's gonna come out a little bit more.
Do you know what I found about like being a quote-unquote comedian is when you go and do jobs like that, when people say you're introduced to as a comedian, people for some reason find you funnier. And I don't know why it is, but maybe it's because they're in their mindset, this is a funny guy. But it is, people get in, I don't know, it's funny. People get into that mindset of, oh, he must be funny. So everything you say, people are like, oh, that's funny. You're like, I haven't really done anything, but okay.
The way you say it. Maybe it's the way you say it.
I don't know, but it's an interesting mindset. But I think you're right about working with other people. It's important, I think, to be open-minded. Even if you're working with people who maybe do things a bit that you're not like, oh, I wouldn't do it that way. But everyone has their own process. And I just think it's, I don't know. I mean, again, I haven't worked in that many industries, so I can't only talk for the ones I do work in. But I think it's important to learn from other people and just be open-minded about that kind of stuff. You can only surely improve like that.
Yeah, no, big time. And as you said, like sometimes people do things and you're like, maybe I'll try that. And you try and you go, no, it doesn't work for me. It works for them. Yeah. I remember like the first time I had talkback in my ear and live, and they were like, one of the first producers, an amazing woman called Sarah, was like, do you want to switch your talkback? I don't fucking know what either of what you said is. But I didn't want to say that. And I was like, what do Ant and Dec do? And they, do you want to switch or open? Do you want to switch or open for your talk back? And I was like, I don't know what switch or open means. Like, I've not a clue. And I was like, what do Ant and Dec do? And she's like, oh, they have a switch. And I was like, yeah, I'll do switch, I think. And turn it, switch is great because open is you hear the whole gallery, you hear everything that's going on. Yeah, and I was like, I just want to hear what I need to hear.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a story once she had told me of where the autocue failed. I think it was for Ant and Dec, or it was some show that she'd worked on. But because the presenter didn't realise, they could only see like a line or two beforehand. So it was still going, but she was typing it as it was happening. But I was like, as a presenter, you don't need to know the madness that's happening because you've got so much stuff and you're trying to stay calm. I'm like, just tell me what I need. If I need to know more, tell me more, but only tell me what I need to know.
That's like Anchorman, isn't it? Sort of typing out the audio as it's happening.
As happening. Thank God there's no question marks in there. Laura Whitmore?
I think it's true. Like, doing live TV, there's so much going on. I remember the first ever live TV gig I had was with joe.co.uk doing a football show. And the first thing they said was, do not react to anything you hear in talkback. So if I say something in a new ear, don't be like, okay, cool, because it'll be on live TV.
Some people do that though. Do you ever see when someone does that and cracks me up?
Chat.
What?
Yeah. What's that? What? Am I hearing things?
Because people at home don't know.
You learn to be like, nod. Okay, just a little nod or whatever, or, you know, at your own little kind of clues. But God, it is madness, but it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. And the most important thing, I was taught just from one of the presenters I worked with was like, just you always have to be inclusive of the people at home. So like, if you're hearing stuff in your ear, you don't want to be like, oh, I'm hearing stuff that you're not hearing. You're kind of on their side. And I think that's really important, is to always kind of have that connection with your home audience. And once you kind of have that in your head, I remember Ricky, who I worked with, one of my first jobs, Ricky Hayward-Williams in MTV. He always did this really like looking at the camera, like he was flirting with the camera, because Trevor Nelson had taught him that. But it works, because it's like you have that connection with the people at home. Yeah. It looks kind of like, it looks a bit weird when I'm doing it, to be honest. It's just a bit like, is she okay?
Maybe that's why I don't do any live TV anymore. I didn't flirt enough.
Flirt with the camera. Not the cameraman, the camera.
Yeah. Actually, that explains a lot, actually, yeah.
That's probably what happened there again.
Yeah, it's the viewers you're trying to arouse, not the camera.
Yes.
Interesting that it worked, though. That is interesting. Mm.
Not for everybody, though.
No.
No, not for everyone.
So going forward, you did, obviously, you're obviously doing your own show on Radio 5 Live. Mm-hmm. Is that nice, being able to sort of cultivate your own show? that's just kind of, you know, and actually a lot about, you know, I really love listening to it, by the way. It's a great show.
Oh, thank you.
But having a bit more kind of creative control on it and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. It's a show I wouldn't have been able to do 10 years ago. It's taken me kind of time to get the confidence. And yeah, I feel like I bring a lot of ideas to that show. I work collaboratively with our producer and AP about like what I want to talk about. And I think that one of the reasons that, because I did a summer series with BBC Five Live, and then I ended up getting the full series. And one of the things the commissioners had said was like, we like the new ideas that you're bringing and the new kind of questions that you're asking. And it's like, how can I do that more? And it's weird, because if I told like Laura 12, 13 years ago, when she was like starting out in that radio show, that she would be have her own show and be on air, it's like mad. It's just mad. But it's a great platform. It's a great opportunity. And I'm using it as much as I can, and talking about things that I really want, stuff that I want to hear in the radio that I'm not hearing, and voices that I haven't heard. Like sometimes that could be, I love that. Sometimes I'm out and I'll meet someone, they're really interesting, and I'm like, oh, I want to bring you on my radio show. That's how it works sometimes. It really happens like that.
Yeah, but if there are things that you want to talk about, sorry, Joss, if there are things that you want to talk about, then it means your audience will want to hear them as well, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes there's things I don't want to talk about, but I don't know about, and that's really important. It's not just stuff that I'm interested in; it's stuff that I don't know about as well. Because I'm like, well, I don't really know much about this, but let's get someone on who can talk about it. Mm. And just having that space, and we've been doing it for 2 years now. I mean, it's only been a year full time. We had the summer series, and I love the audience is growing, the audience is changing. Definitely, like, I think when I first came on air, I was like, who is this blonde girl? Why is she on instead of the politics show? And, you know, you kind of have to kind of fight that. And now I can really feel like our audience growing and people saying, oh, I listened to this at the start and I wasn't so sure, but I'm really into it now. And I'm like, yeah, you have to win people over, but you have to give people time to listen to what they're talking about.
Well, it reminds me actually in some ways of podcasting. Like, you know, you're having you're having quite candid and genuine conversations with people, which you don't.
But just I'm timed.
You've got
5 minutes to do it.
Yeah, very quick. Tell me about your book.
The news is coming up.
There is that element to it, I think, especially when you're having conversations with people. I think you're getting to the heart of things a lot more than you do in most radio shows, I have to say.
Yeah, but I think as well, because it's talk radio, makes a difference. And I actually came from talk radio. It was news talk that I worked in Ireland. And obviously, there's like, I love music, which is really weird that I'm working, like, I started out in MTV and I'm working like in a place that we don't play music. Although I have live sessions, I get live music in as much as possible. But I think I have that space, because normally if it's any other station, you've got like 3 minute links or 2 minute links and then you're playing a song. So I do have a little bit more space than the average show, which is nice.
Yeah. I think there is a, I was going to say more of a desire, more of a want, but I think there is more of a space now for long form interviews, just in general. And podcasting, I think, has definitely helped that. But before, the only place you could really get long form interviews was like Sunday papers, you know what I mean? Or like The Observer or something. Like, it wasn't, TV was chat shows with 5 minute links and stuff. So I think, don't know, it just feels like there is a space for it now. People are thinking, Am I wrong? Or do I think people are open more to candid, deep, long interviews?
People want more. People are smarter than what we're told. We're like, people's attention span will only last. Like, I've been told that before in jobs. You know, we have to do things quick because their attention span will only last this long. And, I think people are smarter than we give them credit for. And I definitely think this year more than ever, maybe that was with lockdown, but I had the radio on more than ever because I had wanted voices in the house and I wanted to listen to conversations. I didn't just want to listen to the news of being told what I can't do. I wanted to kind of have discussions about it, and podcasting as well. And with podcasting too, there's everything from the serious to the comedy to like true crime. There's all these different elements. And I think we are such complex people, like, you know, humans, we're so interesting that we don't just have one side to us where we just want to listen to the same thing in small little spurts of 140 characters or whatever. We want more.
Well, I was going to say, is it a reaction, I guess, to being constricted on social media, for example, to just talking, you know, like you say, in 140, 280 characters, whatever it might be. Actually, we do want more. We want to hear more, and we want to, take in more from people and not just be given sound bites and clickbait and all that kind of stuff.
Big time. And do you know what pisses me off as well? Like headlines. I just think headlines being misleading and
terrible, isn't it?
And I remember when I was studying print journalism, being like, you know, as a reporter, you'd write an article, but you had no choice over what the headline was. Mm. You know, some copywriters would like put in a headline, or the editor would approve it, and it, people at that stage weren't reading the full article. Well, I think podcasts now, we now want more because we know that there's fake news. We know that we're misled.
Yeah.
I remember doing, I did this show, Who Do You Think You Are? Do you know when you find out about your family?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was a lovely show. It was, I really wanted to do it, but I was worried for my family and my mom because I'm like, I'm used to being kind of out there, but I wanted to make sure that they were okay. And it was really lovely. And it was a lovely article a journalist wrote in the Irish Times about it, about, because it wasn't like my family were royalty or anything like that, but there were strong women in there and there was a lot of babies who died because, you know, we lived like years ago. There was no contraception. There was a lot of miscarriages. There was a lot of deaths and there was a lot of like not talking about things. So it was a very kind of open conversation. They wrote this lovely article saying how on my particular episode, it was lovely to see like my interest and enthusiasm in talking about things. And then the headline was Laura's episode of something like this. I'm paraphrasing. Laura's episode of Who Do You Think You Are is interesting to Laura.
Oh my God.
And the thing was, she did write how it was really interesting to me, but to other people. But the art, and I was like, and I remember someone tagging me and going, well, here's an example of a headline being completely misleading. Mm. And I was like, oh, I'm so sick of that. I'm so like, just people just pulling things and just completely going, well, technically it's not a lie. It was interesting to me, but you know what I mean? Yeah, the tone was different and it was clickbait. Yeah.
I don't know. I think people are switching off that kind of stuff. Like, I think sort of, five, 10 years ago with the internet, that stuff did work. But you look at how fewer people are now clicking on stuff. Unfortunately, newspapers are dying as well. But I think
people are questioning
it and switching off. That they actually want, they know that through podcasts or through other stuff, they can get, you know, loads of people doing Patreon stuff now. They know that they can go straight to the artist or straight to the creator and get real stuff rather than having to rely on cheap headlines. It's I do think people are being savvier, like you said, and also that thing about people's attention span only being, you know, 8-9 minutes, whatever. Well, it's only going to be 8-9 minutes if you give them 8-9 minutes of shit. Of course it's only going to be 8-9 minutes. 8-9 minutes of, like, Steps talking about the latest album. Well, I quite like Steps.
I actually really like that album.
I'm just picking a random band. They're very good, actually. Then people are going to switch off. But if you give them 45 minutes or an hour of genuinely interesting content, then people are going to be more switched on to it. I mean, it's not... It's basic science, not difficult, is it?
No. I know. It's frustrating, but I think you are right. I think people are copping on to it a bit better. And what I love about podcasts is, you'll get this, you get better conversations in a podcast. You get more information. I talk a lot more. Like when I'm doing a press interview, especially when it's for a promo for a show or something, I'm like, I'm not talking about this or this or this. In a podcast, I feel a bit safer because I feel... It's not going to be a pull quote. It's not going to be a pull quote. And even if something was taken from this podcast is up for the world to see, to hear. You can go on and listen to it afterwards. And I think in the past, whether it's shorthand or a dictaphone, when someone's doing an interview, we don't have access to that. Mm. So when something is taken and kind of twisted, we don't actually hear the original interview. But people can listen to me talking to you guys now. They know my tone. They know that, like, we're having a conversation. It's, you know, it's not... It's not in any way vicious. It's not in any way intrusive. It's just like a normal chat like we would in the pub. And I think people can listen to that. And I just think that's why podcasts do so well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're getting context. You're getting the context of the interview rather than, like you say, people just pulling out stuff. And to be fair, people have been able to make their own context from quotes for years when actually now we have the source evidence, don't we? So it's definitely changed things. I mean, it's been wonderful with Giles and I doing this pod. And what's been lovely is we don't come into these episodes with any agenda. We just let people talk and people take us on these amazing journeys. And sometimes people take us to really crazy places. And it's been fascinating, actually. Just, again, just getting to know someone over an hour rather than a 5-minute press junket or whatever. So it is.
People go in with an agenda. Like I can sense it. Maybe it's because I've got a journalistic background. When someone just wants a quote from me, like they've already written the quote already. So they're trying to ask me questions to get the answer that is that quote. And I can see them, they're doing it. And I'm like, I'm not going to say that. But they'll try and somehow put questions, leading questions. Well, as you said, this, when you come in with no agenda, you get so much more.
Mm. Yeah.
Is that generally you get that experience with print journalism.
Oh, yes, big time, especially tabloid, when they'll go in with an agenda. And sometimes I'll be doing an interview, and I don't really like doing print interviews that much, unless it's a long form one, unless it's like going to be like a proper long form, it's a cover shoot, and then they're going to give you an hour chat or something. But I find in their heads, they'll be like, well, I've got a headline. I want Laura to talk about this. And I'm like, I'm not here to talk about that. But they'll try and get me to say one thing about that. So then that becomes the story. And it's only from experience that it just makes you kind of close up completely. It just kind of puts you on edge, and it's just not going to be a good interview. I remember, like, I think because I see it from the other side, I interview people so much. Yeah. And I remember years ago, like, I'm never going to ask someone a question they don't want to answer. Like, that's not what I'm here to do. And I've been told by PRs, like, don't ask this, don't ask that. And I will never ask that. Yeah. But I remember, like, years ago asking, I think it was like an MTV and Lily Allen came in. And they're like, don't ask her about her personal life. I'm like, she's here to talk about her album. Why would I ask her about her personal life? Like, I'm not going to do that. But I was talking about her album. But then we start talking about something else. And I was talking about that. I was single at the time, something. She was like, oh my God, well, don't talk to me about being single. Like, but, and she started, and I was like, oh, that was her own. Mm. Like, I never brought that up. And she spoke, and I think she spoke more then because I didn't ask her.
Yes.
She felt safer. So I just feel like there's no need to be intrusive, and people will tell you what they want to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's never been like our remit has never been about sort of trying to sensationalize the conversation, or, you know, for us, it's like Jim said, it's about getting to know someone and having a nice chat. And it's, to be honest, it's a bit like therapy for Jim and I. It's like
free counseling. Free counseling.
Oh, God, we save so much money.
You know, and that's what, you know, a lot of it. Of why we do this is because of that, and I you know, and I'm really grateful for it. I was thinking, do you sometimes miss those days in MTV where you were kind of a little bit more under the radar?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. They were mad days because I was working in television and I was technically talent, but like I had like a 9-to-5 job in a way. Like, you know, I walked to work or I cycled to work. I was in Camden along the canal, and I had a desk. Like, I had a desk and I had colleagues that I'd see every day, and we'd go to the pub on a Friday. And in this industry, it can be quite lonely because you don't have... I remember a few of my friends who were in bands. I was always jealous. You know, if you're in a band, you have four other people, four other girls or four other guys. And like, because I'm freelance, like I can work on a show and have all these people around me, and then I'll move on to another show and it'll be different people, which is why it's always really nice when I'm at a stage now when I've got my team and my hair and my makeup, because they're like my best pals as well. Or there's your regular people that you work with. But at that stage, when I was starting out, I felt really lucky because I felt like I had like an office job in a way. And I was in a city I didn't know anyone in. I'd moved over here from Ireland. I didn't know anyone. It was very overwhelming. So I kind of feel lucky that I had that. I was interviewing all these stars. People weren't interested in me. I wasn't being like pictured leaving my house. And like, I'd walk around Camden. I remember, like, Amy Winehouse. I used to see her around being followed by, like, photographers and thinking, that's insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
Horrific. Yeah, it's horrific what happened to Amy. I think just that harassment is just, yeah.
It's mad. And then I see it now, and I think because I'm a bit older now, and I've been in situations where I've left places, or there's been people outside my house and I've felt very trapped. And I think I saw that happen to other people. Mm. And it's weird then when you kind of see it happening to yourself, and you kind of go, I'm not dealing with this shit. Like, I don't have to.
Yeah.
I can. Anyway, I've talked about this before in the press about, like, or my radio show too, about like upskirting. I remember, like, I was trying to take pictures up your skirt. I went, that was allowed. Like, that was allowed, and we just now it's not, but we just accepted it because that's what we were told was the way. And the older I get, like, I'm happier. I got a bit more attention when I was older than when I was younger, because I just feel I'm in a better place, probably mentally first.
I think that about a lot, about rock stars, about footballers, these kids basically who get insane amounts of attention and intrusion in their
YouTubers,
lives.
YouTubers, that's the other thing as well. Yeah.
I guess YouTubers would be the modern kind of incorporation of that. But I've I've not really felt mentally ready for anything like that. Not that it happens to me, but if it probably now, I'm 36, like now I can't imagine what that would be like at 18, 17, that kind of intrusion. I mean, you're not, well, I heard a thing on a podcast or TV today that men's brains don't fully develop until they're 27 anyway, so you're physically,
some would say, older.
I was gonna say 27. I'm nearly 43 and I'm
still developing.
Yeah.
But you're physiologically not even literally, because I think women, girls' brains develop quick or something. I might be getting this wrong, so I apologise.
They say women mature, like it's a stereotype, but on average, women's mature quicker than.
But
men.
It is linked to literally brain,
like in the brain. It's a scientific fact. Yeah.
Oh my god! So you can tell that science isn't my forte. But anyway, yeah, I just can't. When footballers get criticism and stuff online and stuff, I do actually genuinely feel sorry for them, because I think these are just kids who just don't really, one, have never probably spoken to anyone outside of football, and two, don't know how to deal with this kind of stuff.
It's baseless as well, because it's not based on, you know, it's not based on them as people.
No, it's based on them misplacing a pass once during 90 minutes.
It's so vitriolic, and they don't even know those people. I mean, you know.
It's crazy. And I think that's the hardest thing with any, even like with musicians. And I think it was different, like back in the day. Like I remember even talking to Ed Sheeran, like he gigged before he got famous. Like he did the rounds and he gigged. Well, people get famous very quick now. And like I love the talent shows, and I'm obsessed with the talent shows. But it is hard when someone gets very famous very fast. And I have friends who got famous very, very fast, and how they've had to deal with and going, I almost wish I kind of did it the other way. Yeah. Not because of the stage that they're at or how people in their industry are treating them. It's how people on the outside are treating them. Yeah. And that's why I think we all need to be really careful, because I do it too. Like I'll watch someone on telly, like, oh, the stage, what's she wearing? Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah. I have to watch. We'll be watching a football match and be like, oh, that's like a shit pass. What did you do that for? Mm. But then you forget that. You forget famous people are real people. Yeah. Like, yeah. And I have to watch myself, do you know? Yeah. So we all need to.
Yeah, well, and I guess the naysayers would say, well, it's a trade-off, isn't it? Because, you know, you get this...
It's not. You don't have to. No amount of money is worth abuse.
No, absolutely not.
I watched the Spurs documentary, All or Nothing, on Amazon Prime, which my wife thinks the most boring thing in the world, because she's not into sport. I find it fascinating. I'm such a football nerd. I love all that behind-the-scenes stuff. All the team talks, I love it. And Eric Dier, one of the players, who I have to admit, I don't think rate very much, but like I really felt for him during this... episode, he was talking about when they lose a game, he goes home and he thinks about every single pass in the match, every single thing he did wrong, the whole game. He said he can't sleep. And I was like, wow, I don't even think I do that after watching a Palace game or even playing Sunday League. And yet these guys...
You have a moan and you move on, don't you? You just go on to the next thing.
No, I definitely overanalyze like my creative stuff, but like playing football, maybe not. But these guys still actually, it really, really, really plays in their minds. And that actually made me see... I still don't think he's that great, but that made me see him... And footballers in general as quite differently, actually. So it is interesting. But again, if you're not in that world or you've not had that level of scrutiny, I would never be able to relate to that, because I just don't know what it's like. So, yeah.
But I think more people are getting it now. Like even like John Ronson's book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed and stuff. Like people, because everyone has a platform now, don't they? Everyone's got Twitter and Instagram. Yeah. Like most people do. You don't have to be in the public eye. So we're all in the public eye in some way. I know there've been people who are just have regular jobs that aren't in the public eye, who've tweeted things and then gone viral and had to deal with abuse. So I think life is changing. Like we all need to kind of have a better understanding of how this works, because it's out there and it's continuing. You know, it's not just for the famous footballers or the reality stars or the big musicians. Like everyone's kind of getting little degrees of it, whether it's, you know, in school, or a picture goes viral in school and the girl has to go to school. Like, you know, like we're all dealing with different levels of it. So I think social media and these massive platforms have a lot to answer for and have to deal with things a bit better. But we all do. It's like how we talk to our children, how we talk to each other. We're still navigating through it.
Yeah, we're all accountable.
Yeah.
We're all accountable for sure.
But that's weird, isn't it? We're all having to curate our... It's a shame, because in theory, you'd think... I totally agree about social media. It has a lot to answer for. In theory. But then on the flip side, you have people like Giles who are doing like really nice positive stuff. And so...
Yeah, I use it. I love it, because I use it how I want to use it.
Mm. Yeah. But it'd be nice if we could all just be ourselves online and then connect to people in the same way. But actually, you're right. We do have to be careful and curb ourselves a bit, even if we are just people like me, average Joes. But yeah, I've not thought about that. You do actually have to be really careful, especially young people as well. When my daughter gets to school, I don't know what I'm going to do, because like you say, people that could share something on Instagram.
They won't be. There won't be social media then. It'll be something
oh no,
else.
It'll be like holograms in our.
There'll be a new thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Little chips in our heads.
Oh, yeah. God.
Not looking forward to that.
No. So what's next for you then, Laura? You've obviously you're doing the. Let's finish on a more positive note.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're doing the Radio 5 Live stuff. But and yeah. You're really busy because you've got quite a few podcasts.
There's quite a lot of, this has been like a really busy year. And I know I feel very privileged to say that because I know it hasn't for everyone, especially in the arts and in this industry. So radio continued all during lockdown. I wrote my first book, which is available to pre-order out in March.
Nice.
Castaway series 3 came out this month with the Guilty Feminists. Guilty Feminists, that's hard to say. Deborah Frances White of the Guilty Feminists. She's amazing. We've got Dolly Alderton. We've got Jessie Ware coming on, basically talking about the recommendations. There's so many podcasts out there people are overwhelmed. So I like Desert Island Discs. Sometimes I like to know what people are listening to and why. So actually, I might ask you guys for some recommendations because I just love to know what people are listening to. So that's coming out. I'm the new team captain on Celebrity Juice. We're filming that. So we started that last week, which is brilliant. So we're filming in a TV studio. I've known Keith Lemon for years. So it's great to be a team captain for that. And there's a few other TV stuff that's happening. So it's been really busy, but I kind of nostalgic for lockdown. I was like, I miss being home. Oh my God. My other half is a comedian. He should be on tour at the moment. So hard. I mean, he's doing gigs upstairs in his little studio. I kind of like him being here because he's always be out every night. And now I'm like, oh, we can have dinner together. It's lovely.
Yeah, I'm a bit nostalgic for proper lockdown. I think it's just being like together as a family and, you know, eating together and we try and do that anyway, but yeah, just.
Well, the good news is, guys, second lockdown's on the way.
I was gonna say, yeah.
But it's not as fun the second time round. First time round, it was a novelty. It's only going to be a few weeks.
Yeah,
it's never as fun second time round.
It's never
as fun. Never. Oh, well, Laura, it's been absolute privilege to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
Love your work. And
thank you.
Yeah, it's always nice seeing you pop up on my timeline on Twitter.
I try not to rant.
You're total rare sunshine. It's lovely to see you on there. We normally ask our guests at the end of the podcast about we've kind of covered some blank moments, and we talk about like it's a quite an interpretive kind of term. And how they get so. I mean, I guess it's kind of those difficult moments and how you sort of get through those difficult moments. If you've got any tips or advice for our listeners on how you get through difficult moments,
it's so hard because everyone kind of gets through things differently. And I think one thing I've had to learn to do, and it could be everything from dealing with this year to when I first moved to London, I found it really hard. I found it really, because I had this brilliant job and everyone's like, oh, you're so lucky. But I didn't know anyone. I was like, I didn't think I was pretty enough to be on TV. I didn't have hair and makeup. I didn't have enough money to buy the right clothes. I wasn't like given this glamorous life that people thought I had. And I really felt out of my depth. And I think one thing which it took me a while to do is like asking for help and talking to people about how you feel. And I get imposter syndrome quite a lot, but we all had those close people. It could be like a group of people, of friends, or it could be one person that you can just be honest with. You don't have to like share every single insecurity on, you know, the wide web, but like I think it's important to have your tribe and your people. And anytime I've had a moment, and that can be from this year, because I'm also very protective when things happen that I don't want to, like if I say too much it could end up in the papers. So it's like finding that one person that you trust, or it could be two people or your family, and talking to them, because we don't talk, and we talk, but we don't talk. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
there's a lot of noise around us, but sometimes we don't really say how we're really feeling because we're too scared.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you saying also about the imposter syndrome things. Do you get that? I get it all the time. Well, it's just constant.
Yeah, constant. I think I've been really surprised by like everyone seems to get it. Like from people that I've talked to who are top of their game. Actually, the people who are really good at what they do seem to get it the most. And And yeah, I just remember, I wish I could have told myself when I first started to be a little bit easier on myself, because I was very anxious when I first started in MTV and I loved it and I had a laugh. And but I just felt like someone's going to turn around and realize that I'm not good enough or I'm not cool enough, because I wasn't cool. Like MTV like at that stage had this element of like coolness, and then it's a cool stage, especially when you're working in the music channels and you're interviewing like P. Diddy and Pharrell and J-Lo and Britney. Like I interviewed all these people, and then you meet them and you realize they're real people. Mm. Like I met Britney and I was like, oh my God, I love her. I want to like give her a hug. I met J-Lo and I was like, I just want her to be my best friend. You know, like they're real people. Mm. And they've had busy days. And I remember meeting Justin Bieber, and he'd had like this mad day of like back-to-back interviews. And I was like, have you eaten today? Do you know? Do you know? You just kind of like, you forget, and then you meet them and you realize everyone's battling something or trying to get through something that day. And that's been really eye-opening. But I did just feel out of my depth. I felt like I was interviewing all these glamorous people and I was there doing my makeup myself, like using samples from like department stores because I didn't have enough money for, and just blagging it. Back to what we were talking about, the blagging it. Mm. And for me, I don't even know what you say they're blank moments, but like it felt really, I felt guilty because there should be this amazing moment, but I've all this other stuff going on that I'm probably not enjoying it as much as I should.
Mm. I've actually, that's really, I've felt that about any moments in my career. I've thought, oh, this is a big moment. I've never been able to enjoy it.
Yeah.
More get terrified of like screwing it up and then not getting any more opportunities.
Isn't that right? It's only in hindsight you look back going, oh, that was great. But yeah. You didn't enjoy it at the time because you're
weird,
worrying about other things.
About it, you would think, oh, when I get there, it's going to be great. And actually when you get there, it's either exactly the same or more terrifying.
Yeah.
It's weird. But
I think sometimes when the tougher moments, I'm probably more optimistic because I'm like, sure, can only get better.
Yeah,
do you know?
Yeah, exactly.
when I'm at a good moment, I'm like, oh, I could lose it all. Yeah. Do you know? It's funny.
Mm. It's weird. Our brains are funny things, aren't they?
We're weird, aren't we?
We are weird.
Humans.
We are a bit weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly creative people, though. I think we're wired slightly differently.
Yeah. Another species.
Yeah. Well, Laura, thank you so much for your time today. And honestly, it's been an absolute treat to talk to you. And hopefully we'll catch up again in the real world.
Definitely, whenever that will be.
Yeah.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Giles. Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lovely, lovely start to the day.
Brilliant. There you go. Laura Whitmore on the Blank Podcast. What a lovely guest.
Lovely guest. Laura's so lovely. What an awesome person.
I just, it's funny how much we all had in common, actually. It's funny when you talk to these guests, you realise we've got so much in common, especially sort of Laura and I with the journalism background and sort of TV stuff. But what's nice about these episodes is you get to realise how similar we all are. You know, talking to really successful people and, you know, Laura's incredibly well known and got a big following online and stuff, but actually we're all so similar, and then that's another sort of reassuring thing about doing this pod and this episode in particular.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And we did talk about that briefly, didn't we, about, you know, that sort of changing of going from being sort of quite anonymous on a show,
yeah,
and then going to, you know, to almost like superstardom. You know, she's so well known now. So that's quite a big leap, you know, for someone over, you know, it does seem like probably when you're in it probably seems like quite a long time, but actually quite a short space of time, really. And it was so lovely to hear her thoughts on that, and, you know, again, hearing, which comes up a lot on the podcast, that imposter syndrome right at the end when we were talking about blank moments and how often that comes up. It's amazing, really, isn't it?
It really does. It's such a constant theme. I found it interesting, the bit about how actually, even if you're not massively famous online, you are still out there in the public eye in a way. And referencing John Ronson, our first ever guest, of course, on the Blank Pod, and his book about public shaming. And actually, yeah, you do have to be careful. So that was interesting and very on point, actually, that we're all having to be careful, even if we don't have millions of followers, about what we do. So it's difficult navigating, isn't it, online life sometimes. But
And it is tricky because, like, for you and I, we use it so much to sort of publicise our work, you know, try and, you know, obviously getting people on the podcast, it's vital to be on Twitter and stuff. Yeah. I have got most of our guests via the platform. So, yeah, it's really important to be on those things. But it's just the way we, like you say, navigate those navigate those platforms and actually just put stuff out there that's a bit more positive, a bit kinder.
Which you do. And in fact, actually, speaking about kind tweets, I think we should drop in. I mean, first of all, thank you, Laura, so much for joining us and just
It was great
being really lovely and just, you know, as with all our guests, we're so lucky. Just a lovely hour of chatting to someone interesting and connecting. So thank you so much for her. You know, she's very busy at the moment. Very busy. You think about all the projects she's doing. So we appreciate her time massively. And let's move on to some lovely tweets, which, to be fair, we get so many in our Twitter feed. It's really, really nice. And I think a lot of them are followers of you on your Twitter feed. And it's really nice that those positive people have moved over and follow us as well. It's really quite heartwarming.
Well, I hope some of them follow you as well, Jim.
I seem to get new followers every day, and I think they are blank people. So that's really nice as well.
Cool.
I do feel like my feed is getting
more positive.
Do you follow
Jim Daly Comedy?
Please do. I'm desperate for followers. It's nice to connect to similar-minded people and positivity, you know, that I get as a result. So I do appreciate it. Speaking of which, I've got a tweet here from Natasha Akhtar. Natasha.
Hi, Natasha.
She is at Natasha_Akhtar. AKHTAR. I hope I said that right, Natasha. She says, catching up on Blank Pod, this episode with David Harewood is wonderful. God, what an episode that was. Listening to him talk about the struggles in his career was just incredible. Well worth listening if you're a fan of his work. I couldn't agree more. I mean, that episode I was about to say it's a banger, but that actually doesn't do it justice. It is... everything. It is everything, that episode. It's incredible.
Well, when we were editing it, I was getting emotional all over again because we got quite emotional, all of us, on the pod. And we all had a little cry at some point.
It's powerful. If you haven't listened to it, I think. Maybe
really powerful. And David's a just incredible human being. So please do go back and listen if you haven't heard that one. I think there was some life-changing stuff in that.
Agreed. Absolutely.
I've got a tweet here from Taryn Sudding. Taryn Suds is her handle.
Hi, Taryn.
She says, loving the podcast so much. Sanjeev Bashkar, love his humanity.
Oh, yeah.
Compassion and creativity is everything, as is the journey.
Indeed.
Thank you to Giles and Jim. Next recommendation, please.
Oh, thank you, Taryn. That's lovely. And I mean, Sanjeev is just one of the best people we've met. He's just a wonderful man. And the journey... Absolutely right. And I nearly mentioned that on today's pod, actually, with Laura, because I think we were sort of skirting around the same theme. So, absolutely bang on. If you'd like to send us a tweet about any episode you've enjoyed, we'd love to hear from you. Our Twitter handle is...
at Blank Pod.
And we're also on Instagram and Facebook, and our handle is the exact same.
At Blank Pod. I'm going to just give a little shout out, Jim, sorry, to Cornish Darren Fewins. Because this week he did a very, very nice... photo shop job on our two faces and he merged them one into, as you put it, someone who'd been in Holby City for like last six seasons.
That's what he looks like.
And I thought also probably up for the new role of the Bobby in Heartbeat.
Definitely.
And then also a female version,
which was
not as attractive as I'd hoped. If I have to say.
I was going to say, it's really made me rethink everything about life. No, thank you, Darren. Darren joined our quiz recently, and he's a really nice guy, very funny. Yeah. And these tweets are excellent. I don't know what software he's used to do that. I have to say, Giles, the combined male face of you and me, he's very good looking.
I don't know what
has he done to this software, but he's somehow made us look incredibly just chiseled and just, looks great.
Yeah, and there's been, and looks like we've not had much work done.
No, it's very natural.
And natural beauty. And I think maybe the next heartthrob, Hollywood heartthrob, maybe.
Quite possibly, yes. You can see someone that's going to move over from British soaps over to Hollywood and do pilot season and stuff and try and get some. Well, good luck to him. Good luck to this amalgamation of us. But that was very interesting tweets to receive, so thanks, Darren.
Yes, thank you, Darren.
Made us laugh.
We appreciate your input as always.
Listen, I think we should wrap up the pod there. I mean, we had a lot of fun actually this episode, and some really interesting chat with Laura as well. So, thank you very much to her. Thank you, Giles, for just being you as per.
And you, Jim, for being you.
Thanks, man. And we'll see you again next week with another guest on the Blank Podcast. Take care, stay safe, and we'll see you again soon.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.